Hey, Defenders of the Shield. Steve Raker here from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Kevin Whirlwind X and Phil, the Canadian contingent.
I count as a special guest now. Here's my special intro.
And boy, things have been crazy lately. I mean, this is three quarters of the usual indie comic book noise gang, too. But I've been so busy with vacations and stuff that you guys have been cranking out some indie comic book noises without me. Now check out those episodes, because I've been enjoying them. That's the other show we do.
Liar, you did not even listen to them. You would have told us to stop making them by now if you did.
Until Kevin's part, and then I fast forward. I don't need to hear about more manga and Valiant books.
Well, he's been pretty good lately. I've almost been interested.
Also, upcoming in September, September 25th through 27th, is the Baltimore Comic Con, which is happening at the Baltimore Convention Center. I will be there along with our pal, everybody's pal, New Mutant, and Daryl Taylor from the Taylor Network, and Mike Myers from DC Noise, and we'll be hanging out all 3 days, and there is an awesome artist alley. The guest list is huge. The Harvey Awards are held there. Big-time media guests, and they have really well-thought-out kids programming, like scheduling, and a whole area that's roped off that has kids things going on all the time. It's really well-planned, well-thought-out con. Last year was my first year, but I plan on going as long as they keep inviting me. It's great.
How much do you sell your headshots for again?
Depends on which head you're talking about. Whoa!
Hey, this is PG.
Well, in this crazy summer of me being busy bopping around in everyone's summer schedules, this is really our everything but the kitchen sink type episode, where we're just going to talk about some recent reads and catch up on a couple of the recent Secret Wars number ones. And we'll get to Secret Wars number 5 if we can pull Andrew the L.A. Rabbit out of the ether on his life raft.
And I thought this was a Fantastic Four movie special.
No. Don't.
One of those came out?
You're hurting my heart. I don't want that to succeed so that they can live more prominently in the comics. And so let me just tell you a couple of things I've been reading.
Okay.
And so gather around the iPod, boys and girls. From 1993, one of my favorite creators, Jim Starlin, wrote a graphic novel of Daredevil and the Black Widow, painted by none other than Joe Chiodo. Oh, it's awesome. It's called Abattoir. And, you know, like
you said, that was the 80s?
93.
Oh, 93.
And created in 92. So, but it's still in that Marvel graphic novel 80s, album size.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's painted, it's really can convey a lot of emotion in the brush strokes and swirls and color palette and stuff. And it's a really emotional story. It's like this weird psychic vampire chick teams up with this giant serial killer partner guy. It's almost like a warped hack slash duo, you know? And they're going around killing other psychics, and lots of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, present and former, because of their Psi unit, are being killed, and that puts these killings on Fury's radar, and he enlists the Black Widow when one of her old friends gets carved up, and it's like ritualistic, ceremonial carving up that's like totally sadistic.
Mm-hmm.
And they set this plan, they have Daredevil as the backup, and unfortunately she gets captured, the Black Widow, along with the Bait, who are two S.H.I.E.L.D. psychic agents. And they get brought to this cabin in the Catskills. Daredevil jumps into a taxi to try to catch up to them and loses the signal because they get stuck in traffic.
Not in costume, right?
Oh, man. He is in costume, driving the taxi. He doesn't bother to put on the taxi driver's jacket.
Okay, so he's driving. He's not in the back.
Blind man driving the taxi and no one gets out of his way. But Fury loses them in the traffic, too. And so Daredevil's on their trail, but he's too late, and in the cabin it goes all like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This dude carves up the two S.H.I.E.L.D. agents in front of Natasha, who's held there, and she's getting cut up herself some, but not like these guys. And it's Dee Dee shows up, and he gets an axe in the shoulder. It's crazy.
So does it feel like a horror movie while you're reading?
Totally.
This?
The vamp like chick's childhood is delved into because the Black Widow goes into her memories. It's really wild. It's heavy, for sure. And visually, it's beautiful. And Chiodo makes the Black Widow of, you know, it's the gray suited short hair Frank Miller designed Black Widow. Mm-hmm. And not many make that look good, and Chiodo certainly does, and he does a great Daredevil too. And I wasn't expecting the horror movie that it was.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, it was cool. You should check it out. Abattoir. Yeah, Abattoir.
Yeah, I think it has a memorable cover.
Yeah. Yeah, the cover is very indicative of the inside art. It's not like they went all out for the cover to sell you, and you open it up and it's line art. Have you guys been reading anything?
I got some old and I got some new. What do you want?
Hit me with the old, since I was just doing some old.
Okay. I'll go really old then. I've been reading some like 60s Amazing Spider-Man.
Ah, cool.
This is like the whole, I finished off like the second omnibus. Like largely a lot of stuff I haven't read. Like I got, you know, some back issues here and there. So I'm just like filling in the gaps.
Nice.
Through the Masterworks. And this is like the whole tablet saga in Marvel Masterworks Volume 8. You know, you get a good old tablet. I don't know. I think I might have read summaries or something like that in those old Marvel indexes.
Well, I think they had a What If also with the tablet.
Give us the basic gist.
I gotta say this is I think this is some of my favorite stuff. Like, I don't know what point it trails off, and I wouldn't be interested.
Now, is this Conway already? I forget.
No, this is still Lee Romita and friends, I guess you could say.
Nice.
Because you have, like, was it Jim Mooney and everyone else sort of coming in there.
I love Jim Mooney.
But, I just noticed there's a difference in this run from the omnibus to, like, this volume. And maybe that's because I'm reading them. Like, you're not supposed to read five in a day or whatever. Yeah, like, you know, you get your typical Kingpin stuff, which I just love, because, you know, I just love that character, and he's, like, beating down his own henchmen and fools, like, yeah. Like, what you think of the Kingpin doing in, like, the Frank Miller era, or he's wrestling and everything like that, like, he's still doing that back then. Like, I don't know, I guess people, they try to sell me on the whole Frank Miller-isms of Kingpin, but I still see it back here.
Sure.
And it's probably because it's with the Netflix series. Like, when Kingpin's doing something, like, someone mentions the Kingpin's wife, and the Kingpin just freaks out, and he starts strangling the guy. And I'm like, oh, my God, he's just going to murder this guy. So it's just, like there's that's probably the high point for me. And then you get to the other issues, like the Quicksilver or the Shocker or, you know, some less memorable guys like the Man Mountain Mariko. But some of these issues are just like, it seems like there's fights. Like, I'm falling into the formula. I guess I enjoyed it more when they had the supporting cast. Like, they would go to the coffee bean and everything. And then you get into a bunch of issues, and it's just like, he sees, like, his supporting cast for, like, one panel. And then he runs off and fights someone. And it's just like, I can't talk now, Aunt May or whatever. But he only sees Aunt May for a panel. And I'm like, ah. Like, at some point, the formula of, maybe is changing. I'm not sure, but like, I want to see the next one. It seems like the supporting cast is back for like a long time, but there must have been a stretch here where it was just battle after battle, which is less interesting, but still worthwhile reading. I think the whole hilarious thing with the tablet, though. Everyone's after the tablet, and they're like getting Kurt Connors to like figure out what this tablet means, but they don't really say why until later on. So you're like, well, wouldn't you get like some archaeologist or a language person instead of like getting a guy that's good with reptiles.
Hey, he's old. You use what you got.
Apparently, but they say there's some relation to the biology and stuff. But I also remember the tablet from, I think, Forgotten miniseries. I think it was.
And also the Spider-Man cartoon.
Yes, yeah.
That's where I remember it from.
Oh, yeah, they did do that.
Like, I know they did it in the Ultimate one, but there was also a limited series. I think Steve Rude drew it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was late 90s, early 2000s, which also had the lizard and the tablet.
Yep.
And I think the lizard, like, cures himself or something, and I'm like, I don't think that story's, like in continuity. Like, they probably ignored that whole series.
I really liked those Steve Rude. Steve Rude did a few different limited series around that time when he kind of came back to Marvel after not being willing to work for either of the big two for many years. And it was like, there was a Avengers one, if I'm not mistaken. There was a Thor one. There was what was the other one? It was really good. An X-Men, old X-Men one, original X-Men. And then Spider-Man one, yeah. I should gather those up and read them for a future episode.
I have a lot of future episode blanks.
Yeah, you should write these down this time.
I'm doing it right now.
But yeah, I just realized that I really like old Spidey stuff. Like, really like old Spidey stuff. And the whole deal with Silvermane, it's like, yeah, I'm going to get this thing, and it's going to be a fountain of youth. And you can probably guess where we're heading.
So you said this was like in the 60s?
Yeah.
Yep.
But this is an early 60s. This is like
late 60s.
More attractive late 60s Spidey. So it's not as wordy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes you can get through the issues pretty fast if he's just, you know, socking a bunch of guys in the mouth and then the vulture flies by. And like, there's just a lot of him just wisecracking and everything.
Phil, you have anything?
Well, I did recently read two of the big collections for Venom and Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ooh.
The Remender one.
Oh, cool.
Which, yeah, I gotta say, oh, really? See, I've been very disappointed so far. Because I really wanted to like it, but the one problem was it started jumping into crossovers. So that kind of screwed up, like, Spider-Man.
Yeah. It got off track.
And also, they really, like, his only personal life and character moments were just the Betty stuff about how he was always late for things, you know, and not showing up because he couldn't tell her he was Venom. I found they were really using that too much. Like, there was nothing, like, other than him being on missions, there was nothing really else in that comic, really, so.
I know, but aside from all that, Tom Fowler art doing Venom, that was all I cared about, pretty much.
Yeah, the art I have no problem with, for sure.
The beginning is really interesting, because you get the Fowler stuff, and was it Tony Moore?
Tony Moore at first. And I was getting into the start with the jack-o'-lantern stuff and that, but then that just kind of disappeared right now. Yeah. Like, I know it's going to come back probably in the next volume I have, but right now that's just kind of like fallen off the table.
And it seems like they had like an early concept for that series, and it's like they just get rid of it right away. It's like they could have ran that concept for, I don't know. I guess it's good you have so many ideas, you can just run through them, but...
And now Venom's in space.
Yeah. And so the Ultimate Spider-Man one was the first 12 issues, I think, and the Spider-Man miniseries, where he teams up with the real Spider-Man. And that was really cool, I thought, because for someone who's jumping into the Miles Morales comics, this is all you need, like, for the new stuff, is you just get this volume, it gives you everything you need. Except for he doesn't get his web shooters yet, but I'm pretty sure Aunt May and Gwen will be giving that to him.
So this is the first of the 12. Miles?
Yeah, the first time you see Miles, and I never read that stuff, so it was neat. Now I like him more. I've always liked him, but now I feel more connected to him, reading those first part of his origin.
That would be worth doing, given what happens after the Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why I figure if you've never read them before, pick up this first collection. You don't need the rest, but it's a great starting point for you.
I read, as beautiful as those Spider-Man books from the 60s, believe it or not, even though it was created this year in 2015, three what ultimately ended up being a three-issue limited series, even though it was three one-shots, and it encompassed a storyline called Ultron Forever.
Mm.
There was Avengers Ultron Forever, New Avengers Ultron Forever, and Uncanny Avengers Ultron Forever. And together they made an almost 80-page epic. Given the fact that there was that Rage of Ultron original graphic novel around the same time, I wonder if this was like another, like a, if they took pitches for that and it's like, oh man, this one's good too. Let's figure out a way to put this out too. It's interesting. It's written by Al Ewing with art by Alan Davis and Mark Farmer.
He's writing a lot of Marvel Comics these days.
All three issues drawn by Davis and Farmer, though, so it's just beautiful. But actually, even though I mentioned the Rage of Ultron thing, don't think what Ultron story is this connected to at all. Think Avengers Forever, Kevin.
Oh, boy.
I'm serious. In this, did you read this?
I read the Rage of Ultron, but no, I passed
no,
on.
No, this is completely different. In this tale, a future Doctor Doom calls forth six Avengers from various places in the time stream, right? Sound familiar?
Ooh,
and yep. This is to fight against an Ultron-controlled world. He gathers six, but ends up with seven when the Vision of our current time grabs a hold of the Black Widow just as she's being teleported away to the future. And they join our current female Thor, the Hulk from the Ditko days, like around issue 5 or 6 of his first original series.
So these are our real characters from the 616?
Yeah. Rhodey is Iron Man right around issue 183, right when he's first donning the armor, and it's like giving him headaches because it's not calibrated to his head yet and anything, because there's this thing where he has a moment where he passes through the Vision and... the Vision, and it's to help the Vision, and the Vision's like, that must have caused you a lot of pain. And he's like, dude, I'm feeling pain all the time. This helmet is driving me crazy. And it's they have all, and this great little notes to, like, look back to Iron Man during that time and see what Rhodey's talking about. It's cool. There's also Thor with the beard and the helmet and the golden armor that's supposed to protect his brittle bones from the end part of Walter Simonson's run. When Hela puts that curse on him where he can't die, but he can feel pain and his bones keep breaking, so he puts on that like magic armor and the helmet to cover up his scars. And the original character is a grown-up Luke Cage, Jessica Jones. It's baby Danielle Cage, who is now her era's Captain America, and she kicks butt because she's got her mother's strength and her father's strength and the invulnerable skin and everything, and she's a... She can really clean house.
Can she fly too?
No, she uses a mechanical device to fly that she has to turn off during this adventure because of the fact that they're dealing with Ultron and she doesn't want to be controlled by them. But the story is really cool. They're sent by Doom to fight Ultron, who has his minion versions of the Avengers. And Ultron's headquarters is Asgard, and he sits on Odin's throne. It's really cool. He's the Allfather, and he's got Odin's power. The visual is awesome, as drawn by Davis and Farmer. Then, even after the Ultron War part of the story, that's the first, like, two issues of the three issues, then there's still the Doom part. And the twist reveal at the end all ties back to the Avengers AI series from last year, the year before last, maybe? And the Doombot Avenger that was a part of that team. Very cool, very beautiful series, really well edited as far as giving you cool little, asterisk editor's notes, telling you what era the characters came from or why they're behaving in a certain way, because Ewing takes the time to really make sure everybody's in character. And oh my God, Alan Davis should just draw the Black Widow and Asgard Thor stuff like all the time. Really. Ultron Forever.
I was thinking, what was that other Ultron thing? It kind of reminds me of that. It sort of spun out of the main Busick book. Was it Ultron? Not Ultron Unlimited. Ultron Imperative? Ultron...
Yeah, there was something there, wasn't there?
Yeah. And that was sort of like an 80-page giant type of thing, too.
I remember that. All right, what was your recent thing that you read, Kevin?
It was Ant-Man.
Oh, I haven't read any of that series yet.
Me neither.
Because, well, this is the thing. I was going to read, like, S.H.I.E.L.D., and then S.H.I.E.L.D. On Marvel Unlimited, and then I saw the first page was, like,
boring.
I don't know, Coulson, 8 years old, and I was just like, and then I looked at it, and I'm like, I don't think I care. Sad.
How about the covers of those Ant-Man series, though, all drawn by Mark Brooks, right? Those are hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm like, I don't know. The movie was good, so I'm like, let me go into this. I don't have a problem with Scott Lang. You know, I respect that guy. This is almost, I won't say it's the sequel to The Superior Foes of Spider-Man, but I think it has some of that tone.
Well, it seems like that book that's going to come after Secret Wars certainly is, so I could see that being the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because he's trying to get a job with Tony Stark, but by the end of the first issue, for other reasons, he ends up declining that job and going to Miami and like, you know, trying to find work there. And then he ends up setting up his own like agency there, and he hires the Grizzly on. So I could easily see him with like another series, him hiring more employees of like ex-villains. Since someone gave him a chance, he's going to give them a chance.
Right.
Is his daughter in it?
Yeah.
How did she come back to life?
I don't know. I'm just happy that she's here.
Wasn't it during the Chaos War thing, or is that when he came back?
Well, I don't know, but they sort of play with some of those things because, like, the Grizzly comes after Ant-Man, and he says, I've been thinking about you my whole time in prison, what I was going to do, and then Scott Lang's like, oh, you got the wrong Ant-Man. That was actually Eric O'Grady that you want to beat up?
The greatest Ant-Man.
Yeah. And so then Grisby's like, well, where is he? And he says, well, I think he turned into, like, the Black Ant, and he's a villain now, and I don't really know if you want to chase him down. So the Grizzly's like, oh, geez, well, this is going to work out. Like, sorry about that. And I would say, like, the first issue, it was one of those $5 issues for 32 pages, but it was a meaty issue. Like, they had a multi-page flashback of, like,
that's
all
expensive for 32 pages.
Yeah, but it took me, like, a long time to read.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like, so they have the flashback with all his like past history and everything like that.
Yeah,
I'm like,
I've
wow,
heard the things about it. Yeah,
like if people are coming in from the movie, like you don't really need to spend a few pages recapping comic history. Like I always think that not people that don't necessarily care about the comic history, but it's something you can do later and just get into the adventure.
Ant-Man doesn't really have like you don't need to know anything except for the fact that the stuff about his daughter. But I think they just decided, screw it, we'll just make her alive and start over.
Well, they go sort of into his criminal past. Like some people, you know, don't want to hire him and stuff like that. And then when he goes to get a job with Tony Stark, it's like other characters are there. So the Beetle, you know, the female Beetle from Superior Foes is actually there, which is funny.
Wait, did Scott Lang get her back at the end of the Fantastic Four stuff?
Nope. I don't think so.
Because he was still bumming on her being gone. Because what happened was, remember, he was the one who was dead, and it was the Chaos War thing, I think, or maybe the Avengers, the Young Avengers one with Doom and the Scarlet Witch.
No, she didn't come back in that.
I think she died in that
That's
one.
Where she died.
Yeah, and he came back. They did a switcheroo.
Yeah.
And then he was all bumming on her being gone, and that's why he was wanting to kill Doom all throughout that F4 or FF series. That was the supplement to the Fantastic Four series that Fraction and Allred did. But at the end of that, I think he gets her back, right?
Okay.
As far as I remember, I don't think so, no.
All right. I don't know.
But it could be, yeah.
I'm trying to forget. You know me. I forget a lot of the Fraction.
Well, we read
purpose.
So much comics that you can't remember. Like, it's hard to remember the details. Back.
She's back anyways, and he wants like to visit her and to be in her life and everything, but he doesn't have a house, so his ex-wife isn't happy.
So but
he doesn't really need a house. Like he just buys like some like some castle, or, you know, you can buy pretty much whatever he wants. Like, he just, you know, you can buy a dollhouse or whatever, set it up on the roof, miniaturize himself, set up an iPod, like a big screen.
That's true.
That's not a comfortable bed, those doll beds.
No, there's some pretty...
Oh,
like,
that's true.
Like some, get the high quality doll stuff.
I'm thinking of that plastic.
So, like, Cassie's into the whole shrinking down and watching, like, in being in, like, his crazy house that's not a house, but, you know, his ex-wife doesn't want her involved in, you know, superhero craziness.
She was always like that in the old ones, too.
She doesn't remember being stature then? It seemed like she's new and young. Are they just not going there? Don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, I just think they're not going there. Like, she's trying to have a regular.
Yeah, see, I don't like that too much. Because I like her history. Like,
yeah, me too. She was a good character.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no reason she can't, like, do something later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, but usually Marvel doesn't just erase, you know.
Well, that's what past. I'm thinking they're, like, they would just wouldn't mention it, because they went into, like, 4 pages in the first issue, like, intense Ant-Man history. So I'm like...
This isn't her story.
Lots of history at play.
This isn't her story, and if they want to tell her story, they might do it in these pages, or they might do it elsewhere. But, interesting. Well, I'm looking forward to both this and what the other series is that's going to follow Secret Wars, where it seems like it's very Thunderbolts-y in a lot of ways.
So Thunderbolts. Or no, not Thunderbolts-y, Superior Foe Spider-Man.
Yeah, well, that was Thunderbolts-y too.
No, it wasn't. Thunderbolts-y was more like it.
It was more Thunderbolts than Red Hulk Thunderbolts.
Well, it's better than Thunderbolts, is what I'm trying to say.
Phil, you got another one, or you want to save your airtime for the number ones?
That's all I have. That's all right. I've been, besides Secret War stuff, like, that's all that's been taken.
Let me shoot out to you another recent series.
Oh, wait, sorry. One more.
Go for it.
I just want to mention Battle World number 4.
Yeah.
The rest of the series isn't that great, like, for the most part, that and Secret Wars Journal, but Battle War number 4 has 2 Silver Surfer tales.
Ooh.
One by James Stokey, Silver Surfer versus Galactus, which is just beautiful, where it's him and the Juggernaut hunting down Fing Fang Foom for meat.
What?
Yeah, it's really, really cool, and there's, like, this crazy Galactus, like, really, really cool story and art by him, obviously. I'm a big fan of him. And then the other one is him and the Maestro, like, him going back to get his broken board from his trophy room. Like, really cool stuff. So if you're a big fan of that storyline, this is a must get. Like, I really enjoyed this issue.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to read that. I've got it on the pile.
It's just, nice.
Just down there on the pile.
That's it.
I just read Howard the Duck, the 5-issue series. So brace yourselves here, because there's always strong feelings one way or the other about the Duck. And it sounds like the same creative team is also going to be continuing on beyond the Secret Wars. So this is kind of the current version of the Duck. And Howard was, of course, created by Steve Gerber and Val Mayerick back in the day. And Gerber has always had pretty much Howard's only real true voice, although I gotta say, a few years ago, that Fred Van Lente did a really nice job with him in one of those Marvel Zombie series. I think it was Destroy, when he and a group of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents go to a Nazi dimension, alternate Nazi zombie dimension, and him and Dum-Dum Dugan going back and forth with their dialogue was really good. So that felt like a very good Howard. This is written by Chip Zdarsky with art by Joe Quinones. And, I mean, the series, it could be better, but it's not altogether terrible or anything. The first issue establishes him as a private eye. He crosses paths regularly with the She-Hulk because he shares office space with her. And he crosses paths with Spidey. He actually has to look for Spidey to find where the Black Cat is, because Howard has to rob her of this thing that he was hired to get that she robbed from somebody else. But then he gets captured, Howard the Duck does, by a goon, one of the collector's goons, who is called the Gatherer. And the second
only because it's in Guardians of the Galaxy, the movie.
Yeah, and of course, there's the Rocket Raccoon obligatory guest team up. The second dish is, has that. He meets Rocket.
I can see them working
in captivity. And they work together to escape, and along with the rest of the Guardians of the Galaxy are in the second ish. And it's funny, they come across, they have a panel where they describe CosmoCon. It's like a cosmic convention, and the collector's like there buying stuff, and they're trying to escape and before he fills his bag and comes home. There's a backup in the second issue that's drawn by Rob Guillory from Chew. Mm-hmm. And it's a courtroom drama as Luke Cage and the Fist are suing the Duck to cease use of the Hero for Hire moniker and all his private investigator Hero for Hire ads.
So far, I'm interested just from what's been happening in these first two issues.
Well, it gets better. Because the third issue opens with Howard being mugged at gunpoint by Aunt May.
Now, how could you explain this?
Actually, that's how the second issue ends and the third issue begins. And it launches into they uncover a scheme of the Ringmaster and his circus of crime, who are hypnotizing the elderly to commit petty crimes for them. Petty cash. There's also this recurring side gags of Spider-Man throughout various issues too, of him like losing people and like feeling the guilt and like going, no, it's pretty funny. The third ish has a backup that's drawn by Jason Latour that I found hilarious. There's a Wolverine, Thor, and Captain America, like celebrity impersonator guys, who hire Howard to find their originals because in current continuity, you know, Wolverine's dead and Captain America is now Sam Wilson and Thor is now a girl. So these impersonators who are the classic versions, all their gigs are drying up. So Howard's got to figure out where they're... And so his back and forth with them was kind of funny. And
so there's a backup in every issue?
No, 2, 3, and 4. Because 4 and 5 is a double story, and the fifth issue, because it's the last of this volume, was the story took the whole thing up. The backup in issue 4, though, was drawn by Katie Cook, and it was really weird. It was like Howard the Duck and Ant-Man taking on the White Rabbit, and it was only like a 3-pager or maybe a 4-pager, where the other ones were a little bit longer.
Not a big fan of that character, the White Rabbit.
I know who would be a big fan of that character.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
But he's floating in the ether in his life raft after the final incursion. And so issues 4 and 5 are an Infinity Gauntlet parody. They heavily guest star Doctor Strange and the Human Torch. And
that's awesome.
Both of those guys are really well portrayed, I thought, and have good gags surrounding the two of them. And issue 5 has a bunch of guest stars because the Cavalry arrives to fight a bunch of these demon guys, a bunch of New York City's heroes, the Fantastic Four, Silk, Spider-Woman, the all-new Captain America, the new Thor, Squirrel Girl, Iron Fist, Ms. Marvel. And then it turns out, kind of another nod to continuity, is it turns out that Howard's new girl pal, not really girlfriend, that he's met over these issues, has some shape-shifting ability, and he's afraid that she's a Skrull, but it turns out she's not. She's one of the Skrull kill crew. Nice. She was like a recruit, and she never joined the group, but she has the same abilities as that Skrull-killing bunch that are related to the fact that they ate the meat of the cows that were really converted yeah. Skrulls from back in the Lee Kirby days.
Mmm, Skrull milk.
Morrison.
But I don't know. It was, like I said, not altogether terrible or anything. Could be better because it's Howard and you expect great things. But
for me, though, I'm craving the trade now because that sounds right up my alley. Where like Squirrel Girl was kind of boring and too silly for me.
Agreed.
This sounds perfect for me.
The stories are good. The art I would like to be a little tighter, I think. And okay. I don't dislike Quinones. But for some reason, I'd like the art to be a little tighter in some places. But I think they're the same team that's going to be in the next Howard series volume after Secret Wars. So
is it the same person who does the covers? That's all I've seen.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And of course, you know, they are limited to how they're allowed to portray Howard because of Disney and, Donald Duck.
Yeah. I don't think people will get mixed up.
Well, you used to would have been able to. That was part of the joke, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway. Another one I read, a quick one, is I know that I like to keep you guys informed on the Infinite Comics when they Marvel has them, the digital ones. Mm-hmm. And the most recent one is still ongoing. It's up to issue 11. I've only read the first nine. And they are Ultimate Spider-Man, not related to the comics Ultimate Spider-Man, but the cartoon.
Oh, okay.
And in the same sensibilities of the show, cartoon-like dialogue. Really good cartoon-like dialogue if you like the sensibility of the show, but there's a lot of it. It's really dense because of that. But you also, it's a pretty dense read because of that. The opening issue is good because it's like the opening scene for the series, and they do it like a Bond movie that has like a opening action sequence that they throw you right in the middle of that doesn't really have anything to do with the rest of the series, but it's still good because it's Spider-Man apprehending the Jack-O-Lantern, and they've never had the Jack-O-Lantern on the cartoon, so
I like the Jack-O-Lantern.
That was cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so the first six issues is one storyline. It's written by Eugene Sun with the layouts, and the layouts are, you know, specially done because of the whole Infinite Digital Comics tapping layering stuff. They're done by Mast and Jeffo, and then the regular art is done by Luciano Vicetto. And the first six-issue arc is their version of the J. Jonah Jameson Smythe Spider Slayers epic. So that was pretty entertaining. The second arc, I've read the first three issues, 7 through 9 so far, is called Field Trip, and Matt Kint writes it, with Mast and Jeffo still doing the Infinite Comic layouts, and then someone named Souch doing the regular art. And this is a Spider-Man and the Power Man from the cartoon, who's the youth Power Man, versus the Spot. And it's taking them all over the place, from the Statue of Liberty to the St. Louis Arch to the Grand Canyon so far. But enjoyable, and in the same vein as this cartoon, so a good all-ages comic, but it's not something that if you're a regular hardcore 616 reader, you'd need to pick up at all.
Yeah. Well, maybe you're a hardcore Spot reader.
The Spot is cool, and he's depicted pretty cool here when they're, like, trying to figure out what his deal is, especially with Cage, you know, wanting to use his muscle.
Spot has a big role in one of the Secret War titles, too.
Hmm. Should we get to a couple of those? The new number ones of this from the Secret Wars?
Yes, I didn't read any, so you're going to have to fill me in on them. Because there's three that came out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't pick those up.
The three are Howard the Human, The House of M, and...
Now I want that.
And Secret Wars, Secret Love. Which one do you really want?
The Howard one, now that I want the other series. I wish I'd picked that one.
You know what, though? The Howard the Human one? Mm-hmm. It's the first one that I actually think was sort of a stinker.
Oh, okay.
Of all of the Secret Wars tie-ins.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the creators involved, too. It's written by Scotty Young with art by Jim Mahfood. And I really like Jim Mahfood. I read a bunch of his stuff on the side that's un-Marvel related.
Uh-huh.
This is totally shades of Roger Rabbit, though. It's Howard is a human private investigator for hire in a city of all, like, anthropomorphic animals, basically. And he runs afoul.
Andrew would love this.
He runs afoul of, pun intended, Felicia, the black cat. And he enlists the aides of blind lawyer Mouse Murdoch. You know, it's almost going into like Captain Carrot and the Zoo Crew territory.
Yeah. Spider Parker,
a gorilla Wilson Fisk and his army of monkey ninjas, and it's a bit too silly for me.
Yeah, the comic can't just survive on characters being animals.
I think it's just a one shot though.
Yeah. Okay, then.
It ended with a the end. So.
Okay, nice. Well, that's okay then. If it's just a one shot. Yeah. Like, I don't mind that, but yeah, a big miniseries of that would have been kind of boring.
Also, what I think was a one-shot, although I'm not entirely certain, but I think it was Secret Wars, Secret Love.
Well, yeah, I haven't seen any more of those in previews, so I'm pretty sure they are one-shots, yeah.
The cover is a total Lichtenstein ripoff, which is fun to say since he was a ripoff artist himself. And this one's done by David Nakamura.
Is this another anthology?
Or Nakayama, I should say. It is an anthology. There are five stories here. There's 3 7-page stories, a 3-pager, and then a 5-pager.
I saw some preview pages for this one, and then I was just like, wow, this one looks really nice.
There is some good stuff in here, but it reads like an anthology. It has peaks and valleys. troughs and waves. the first seven pager is by written and drawn by Michael Fife, and it is a unabashed love letter summarizing the Ann Nesenti, John Romita Jr. era Daredevil.
That's my scene.
Kind of from the, you know, Karen Page and Matt Murdock romance side of it, which is entertaining. But the art is so indie. It's very gritty and Frank Miller-y, so it's pretty interesting. The second one is drawn and written by Felipe Smith, and it teams the Robbie Rodriguez Ghost Driver writer guy with the new teen Ms. Marvel girl. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just a couple of teens hanging out at the Coliseum. they have a interesting interaction. And then there is another seven-pager written by Jeremy Whitley, drawn by Giri Huru, who has that really clean animated-looking style. And this is Misty Knight and Iron Fist, who are married, getting a sitter and going out on a date and getting to kick
some
butt.
Fun little story, it sounds like.
Yes, actually, it very much was, as was the Ghost Driver one with Ms. Marvel. Mm-hmm. Then there's a three-pager that is written by Marguerite Bennett with art by Chris Anka, and that is Squirrel Girl, who at a charity fund wins a date with Thor and pokes around at his pecs a little bit.
Yeah, I can only imagine what
pecs at his pecs.
Then I used to like Squirrel Girl a lot, but not anymore, really.
Then there's a five-pager. Yeah, when she's sicking squirrels on Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
You know, that's funny, but...
Yeah, it just overuse. Like, she's the kind of character you can't overuse. Really.
The last story is a five-pager written and drawn by Katie Cook. It is bug versions of Ant-Man and the Wasp having an ant-versary.
Mm-hmm. I love her sort of work.
So, that's Secret Wars, Secret Love anthology. The last one is a more of a tie-in to the battle world we know and have become fond of. A Chris Anka cover, and he's the one who did the Squirrel Girl in the anthology there. But the inside is written by Dennis Hopeless with art by Marco Faglia. And this is the House of M. King Magneto is established in the beginning of it as the warrior leader of the mutant royal family. He's King Magnus and all that. But most of the issue is around this faction of oppressed humans. Many of them like partial superhumans. There's like Bullseye, the Black Cat, Speedball, Iron Fist, Shang-Chi, Misty Knight, the White Tiger, the female one, Hawkeye, Luke Cage with like cornrows, Elektra, Darkhawk, Kevin, Darkhawk.
Oh, nice. Yes. Hey, I'm a bigger Darkhawk fan than Kevin.
You are? All right.
Oh, what?
Darkhawk.
I don't know.
Get over it.
We're going to have to rumble who's a bigger Darkhawk fan.
Moon Knight, Songbird, Kevin, Songbird.
Wow.
I know whose name to call
Songbird.
For that.
He can take that.
And the Shi'ar Gladiator. I don't know what he's doing in that bunch, but he is.
Yeah, that's a weird ad.
So they're standing around and they are plotting to overthrow Magneto because the humans are all oppressed and everything by they're the minority.
Magneto's a jerk.
So they, while they're in their headquarters plotting, they are discovered and attacked by Magneto's mutant guard that teleport in via Nightcrawler. So it's Nightcrawler and Wolverine and Toad and Rogue and Marrow and Mystique and Sasquatch. Sass.
Don't say Marrow and roll your eyes, Kevin.
Yeah, I don't like Marrow.
Was it the pretty Marrow or the...
the pretty...
She's not too bad.
Well, you know that she had the pink fur coming out of her when she was sort of cured or whatever?
Crazy. Then, but only, it seems, I'm not sure what happens to everyone else. We see a lot of carnage going on in the battle, but it seems like only Misty Knight, Hawkeye, and the Black Cat make it out. And the issue ends with a hint of treachery brewing by King Magnus's son, Quicksilver, Prince Petro. He's conspiring against his father's throne with Namor in Atlantis. And that's how the issue ends.
So, or Namor.
That could be good. I was not a big fan of the House of M to begin with, but seeing...
Yeah, it was
having it already be established and seeing how it might get taken down might be entertaining.
Yeah, I reread House of M, like, just the main, and I enjoyed it, but yeah, a lot of the other stuff I didn't enjoy as much.
Well, the art's so nice.
Yeah. I don't like what they did.
That's what it has going for it, at least.
So negative, Kevin.
No, that's not one of my favorite events. I know that it's hilarious I say that, and then I bought two trades of like House of M stuff after the event ended because some of that stuff was street level and really good, but main series, I've never been really a fan.
All right, Phil. It's the moment you've been waiting for.
Let's get into the new Marvel Universe. And when does this start anyway, in October?
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess. Yeah.
October, and the recent solicits for November just came over, so we've got, or came out, so we have 2 months of the first look at what the post-Secret Wars Marvel Universe is going to be. And I happen to know of at least one other book that's can't be mentioned that's on its way, so there's got to be other books that are coming too that we'll probably see in December and January solicits.
Yeah.
But here's our first look, and it's quite a few number ones.
45. So the first one is Invincible Iron Man number 1 by Bendis. Kevin told me that he's going to be doing a second Iron Man title.
It's
that
Bendis.
Seems kind of weird to me, though, but like Iron Man does not need two titles, especially by the same writer. It seems kind of silly to me.
It's interesting that Bendis has done Iron Man in Avengers and New Avengers and all that, and mm-hmm. then he wrote him in Guardians of the Galaxy. He wrote him into his Guardians book when that started.
Yeah, which I liked.
And now he's going to be finally writing his solo book, so he must enjoy the character to some extent.
Yeah,
not just
he must
be
have
jumping
some,
on the cash cow of it.
Well, he must have been thinking about him for a while, so he probably has some neat stuff coming up.
Well,
but
now
I
you
used
can do
to
all that
liking
parent
him
stuff.
On team books, though. And that, yeah.
They talk about making a new Rogues Gallery for him and expanding and making a bunch of new characters. And I guess if anyone for the company is going to do it, it's going to be someone like Bendis, who's had a bunch of long years of being part of the inside circle of the company.
Definitely. And then we have A-Force number 1 by G. Willow Wilson. What do you think of Dazzler's new look? I think that's kind of... I don't like that new look where she has the black hair and then the blonde on the sides.
Yeah, it's hurting.
Yeah. But otherwise, I don't know. This could be a cool book. I know the Battle Worlds titles, like, people seem to really like it.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. That's one of those books where I can't really get a sense of wrap my head around it until Secret Wars is over to know, are they just going to carry on the name? Now we've seen Marvel just carry on the name and have the content of the book be something so different. Whether
exactly.
You know what I mean? And like the Infinity Gauntlet in the Secret Wars is a small little family story that has nothing to do.
It's great, but so different.
But yeah. Exactly. So now we're seeing the opposite. Can there be a title that's created in the event? I can't expect that that's going to be the same coming out of it. So we'll see. That might just be like,
that's
a
good
cool
writer. Yeah, it is a good writer, though. So she might be able to do it. And then we have All New, All Different Avengers number 1 by Mark Waid and Adam Kubert. I did not like the Free Comic Book Day issue, so I'm not looking forward to this.
I thought that was good. This is what I've been waiting for. Well, I guess Waid sort of had a mini run right before they did the whole Heroes Reborn thing, but it seems like I've been waiting for years for Waid to, I guess he had to become to his current level of prominence again to take on the Avengers.
When you look at these Avenger teams, though, they're not very impressive.
It seems like the Young Avengers or something. I mean,
yeah, because you got Miles, you got the new Miss Marvel girl there, and Nova. I'm excited Nova's on the team, though.
It seems like a very corporate marketing chosen group of Avengers rather than story chosen or history of the Avengers chosen. So, whatever.
Yeah. Like, if the Avengers 2 didn't come out, Vision would not be there, yeah, for sure.
Like, like when they did the new Bendis' new Avengers, it was, like, such a move to throw in, Wolverine and or Spider-Man, right? But here, it's, like, that amped up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this...
the extreme.
I have weird standards, though. Steve, you know this.
I do.
This feels more like an Avengers team than that new Avengers team. Like,
I'm still striving to meet your strange standards.
Then we have Uncanny Avengers number one by Jerry Duggan and Ryan Stegman. This is a weird team too, because it's kind of a mutant, non-mutant team again, which is okay, but it's old Captain America leading it and Deadpool's on the team.
I can't imagine that it's going to be bad, like, written by Duggan. He has...
No, well, I'm sure it's going to be good, but he does not deserve to be an Avenger any day of the week. Like,
that's like Wolverine being an Avenger.
He's been working for old Cap, though, throughout.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's been Duggan's run on both Deadpool and on Hulk that we've seen him doing missions for old Captain America. So we'll see. Give him a chance.
I just find being an Avenger doesn't mean anything anymore. Like, now just anybody could be an Avenger.
Agreed.
That's my problem, kind of.
They would have liked to have, in back in the day when the X-Men were the biggest deal, made anyone a mutant, and some people they stretched to try to act like maybe they were a mutant just to be able to include them under the X-Men banner. But it's like, here, you don't have that. Like, you can be on the number one team and not, there's no, like, you have to figure out how to make it work genetically. It's like, woohoo, you could just throw anybody in together.
Yeah, and but the next one's Duke,
wait, one more thing about Duggan. He really has knocked out of the park everything he's done for Marvel so far. The Nova stuff, and he's got Nova on his team too, right?
Uh-huh.
Nova and Deadpool and Hulk.
Oh, no. No, he doesn't have Nova.
Oh, Nova's on one of the other guys'
That's on the Mike Wade team.
All right.
Yeah. But, he has, what's his name, Dr. Voodoo, though.
I talked to Duggan at the Boston Comic Con and was saying to him, thanking him, saying, I've really enjoyed your growing corner of the Marvel Universe. And I joked to him about how I know he's slumming working for comics kind of a thing, but the Hulk stuff I really particularly enjoyed. And he really was gracious about it, and he really looked like he was enjoying his stuff, and couldn't kind of say what was coming up, but said that he's got more coming. So I'm sure this is it.
And then we have New Avengers number one by Al Ewing and Gerardo Sandoval.
Mm-hmm. Is that Songbird?
This is a kind of a dumb team too, though, because Squirrel Girl's on there, and it's the Sunspot AIM stuff, which I'm not really into.
I don't like the Sunspot AIM thing, but I don't like Squirrel Girl.
Yeah, see, I was getting kind of bored of that a bit. I used to like Sunspot a lot, but that's the thing. Squirrel Girl's not a good fit. But who knows? Could be good. And then
we're obligated to try this, Steve. You know, we'll keep our ongoing Thunderbolts coverage.
Yep.
I don't know if that's Thunderboltsy, but maybe.
You've got Songbird in her classic costume. I'm there.
Yeah, that's true. And then another Halloween book with Kenneth Rocafort on art, which this one I'm kind of interested in. Ultimates number one.
Yeah, that ought to last four or five issues before Rocafort can't keep up.
Probably, but there's some cool members on this team. We got Black Panther. We got what's the one with the white costume? Is her name Miss Marvel too?
White costume,
not Photon.
Oh, Photon. Sorry.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Then we have the Blue Marvel, I believe. The Captain America girl from I forget what universe she's from. And Captain Marvel, and Galactus is in the background, and I don't know. Like it's going to be cool.
The Captain America girl, is she black or white?
Yes, black. Yeah, hood.
With a red hood.
Yeah, she's red.
Oh, okay.
Isn't she the Young Avengers one?
The Miss America.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Oh, Miss America. That's right. Yeah. And the Blue Marvel, he looks pretty cool. I like his updated look. I think that's the Blue Marvel, anyway.
Yeah.
And then Doctor Strange number one by Jason Aaron and Chris Bachalo. Do you think he's going to have the axe all the time, or it's just for maybe the first storyline or something?
I don't know. It's not like when they sell toys now or anything, they can afford to include the props. So there's not that angle anymore, right? So I don't know what the deal is with the axe.
Remember, Steve, when you used to have an accessory, a vehicle, and a background prop all in the same Marvel Legends package?
I don't think he'll be using it all the time. I think it's just for covers or maybe in the first story a bit or something, depending on what he's doing.
You don't want to use, it's like Spider-Man using the Spider-Mobile. You get tired, so sometimes you don't want to use the magic. You can just use your axe instead.
For all I know, it's the axe of Agamotto.
Could be.
Yeah, that's probably my biggest, the one I'm most excited for, a Doctor Strange. If I ever thought a creative team was going to do it properly in a modern age, you're not going to pick a better team than that.
Kevin, you're making me so happy.
Me too. And Doctor Strange is definitely a cool character, so I'm excited for that one. Captain Marvel number one, which is looks like she has a space corpse, I guess, kind of like a police force protecting the planet, maybe. By the looks of it, because she, which is kind of cool, because that's what she does, right? She's a pilot, and her Battle World comic is a corpse, isn't it? Like she has a group that she.
Yeah,
like
well, it seems like they're really, you know, first it was a kind of a, I think, a like a fan-generated jokey kind of a name, saying the Carol Corps for her group of supporting cast, and then they took it literally with the Secret Wars tie-in, and now it sounds like they're going to kind of, that's tied to the character now, and the Carol Corps.
Then we got Sam Wilson, Captain America, so he's still Captain America after this.
Yep.
I'm sure people were wondering about that. And that's by Nick Spencer, surprisingly. Then here's the totally awesome Hulk, number one. Boo, by Greg Pak and Frank Chow. Oh, so we have a new Hulk coming out.
Pak writing the Hulk again.
Yeah. It's a brand new Hulk, and his head is blanked out and his arm for some reason.
Yeah. Well, it has to be a good twist to, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm not excited for that. I want the real Hulk. And
how do you know it's not the real Hulk?
Because it isn't. He said in an interview that it wasn't. And then we have the Mighty Thor number one by Jason Aaron also.
That cover is mind-blowing.
Yeah, still the girl. Yeah, very cool cover where it's like half of her head and then half of her normal head. And so more of the girl Thor, which is I'm fine with. No problem with that. Scarlet Witch number one by James Robinson and Kevin Wada. I might read it because it's James Robinson, but yeah, it's not usually a character I would probably pick up otherwise. Then we have Miss Marvel, which is the young version by Willow Wilson also. And I can't get into this character really for some reason.
Ditto.
Yeah, so I don't think I'll be getting that.
That means I gotta read it and... Oh, yep. This is going to be fun.
Well, I think Andrew likes that character, too. I'm pretty sure. Illuminati number one by Josh Williamson and Sean Crystal. I'm excited for this because it has the Eric O'Grady Ant-Man in it, Absorbing Man, Titana, and I'm not sure who the rest of the members are, but the Hood's leading the team.
You know, I can't really get into the Hood anymore.
No, me neither, but it's more the Absorbing Man and... Titana stuff I think will be fun, like they're bickering, and plus the Ant-Man guy, I like him. Hawkman number one by Jeff Lemire still, and it looks like they jump ahead a bunch of years because Hawkman's old now and she's older.
Hawkeye turns into Hawkman.
Well, yeah, it looks like he's turning into the old man Logan Hawkman almost.
He's not Hawkboy anymore. He's Hawkman.
No. So that could be cool. So obviously it's not going to take place at the same time. And then we have Ant-Man number one, which I'm sure we're all going to get. It's by Nick Spencer. It looks like it's just like Superior Spider-Man foes, like we said, or Thunderbolts.
Yeah. Seeing that cover, I think, helped me to get around to reading the Marvel Unlimited thing, because I was like, oh, that looks like cool stuff, you know, coming up. I want to get
caught
up. I'm
going to miss the Shocker and Boomerang, though.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Then we have The Vision number one by Tom King.
Yay!
Yeah!
He's a personal friend. I'm so happy that he's doing something for Marvel so I can be happy for him.
This reminds me of the 80s.
But I don't know what to think of a Vision book, though, like if I'll be able to get into it or not. Because I'd have no clue what it's going to be about. But I don't know if that's one I'll be able to get. Then we have Contest of Champions number one by Halloween. And it's based on the game. The iOS app. So I don't know how good, like, so far the DC's done a good job with the video game comics. I've really enjoyed some of them, like Injustice, but this one, the game never had a good story to begin with, so I'm not sure if this one will be good or not, but I'm kind of interested because Maestro is the big villain in it, so obviously that's going to be a big seller for me, and plus I love seeing heroes that are usually don't team up or anything fighting each other and stuff. Will be fun. Then we have Amazing Spider-Man number one, still by Dan Slott. I've liked his stuff, but It seems like he should have stopped his run, you know, a couple times now, like, and do something else.
Well, I like the idea that they're going by, like, how many stories the guy has and what he's doing rather than, here's an event, so this is the time for you to end a run because we're shuffling the deck chairs or whatever. It seems like they're letting the creativity run its course rather than switching things around arbitrarily just because we're stopping a volume and starting another. I like that about Marvel these days, whether it was with the Mark Waid, Somni, Daredevil stuff, or we're even seeing it with the Quinones and Zdarsky, Howard the Duck, whether that's good or bad, you can decide. But with Spider-Man 2 with Slott, like, let them carry over even. Like, don't let the event screw up a whole guy's run like they did to McDuffie back in the day. You know what I mean? Like, on Fantastic Four or... just let the writer if he's got stories, let him tell them.
Yeah, maybe he needs a second title then or something, because I feel like I want, like, I think I'd rather Dan Slott. Yeah, I think I want Dan Slott. I'd rather him do maybe miniseries or something.
Yeah, yeah. You're done, but he's not. And that's fair. There'll be more Spider-Man stories out there for you someday.
Well, there is another Spider-Man.
Well, I never said
title.
I stopped. I just said I'm getting kind of like, I just want a new voice, just because it seems like he's been going on for a little while, and I wouldn't say it's my favorite Spider-Man run or anything.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough.
Yeah. I like the Doc Ock stuff. I would have been happier if that went on longer.
I think it's good, though, that they have one Spider-Man book in New York, and then like the Peter Parker Amazing Spider-Man, he's going worldwide, so they don't necessarily have to cover the same ground.
Happy, yeah, because that's true. I got Miles now, so maybe I'll be okay. Then we have Carnage number 1 by Jerry Conway and Mike Perkins.
What?
This must be a miniseries. I don't understand this one.
Yeah, and in the cover, it's Carnage's face and he's swallowing a mine shaft. So it seems like it's going to be a specific maybe miniseries towards like something to do with mines anyway.
Mimes.
Mimes.
Swallowing mimes.
Spider-Woman.
And they can't
one.
Scream. They can only wave their arms.
You remember Silent Month? Paul Jenkins? Mimes.
Then we have Spider-Woman number 1, which will be very talked about, I'm sure, because she's a pregnant Spider-Woman fighting.
All right, now I don't mind the new costume, because I don't want to see her pregnant in that old costume.
It's true. That one looks so odd. It's true. It's true. This costume looks fine like that. Then we have Spider-Man number 1 by Brian Michael Bendis, which is the Miles one. So I'll be getting that one for sure. Spider-Gwen number 1, boo.
Yes! I'll be getting that one for sure. That's so awesome.
And then we have a double boo, Silk number 1. Come on.
Silk isn't bad.
Yeah, I don't mind Silk either. I actually like her as a character quite a bit. And she's not the same thing as like Spider-Gwen, because Spider-Gwen's in a whole alternate reality, you know?
Yeah. I haven't read Silk, so I can't really trash her too much, but it's just not something that interests me, though, really.
I didn't like the whole premise of it, and I didn't like the idea, but I've actually grown to like the character a little.
Then let's go further down the crap hole.
Oh, wait, before you flush, there's one other Spidey title is Spider-Man 2099.
Well, that's what I'm about to talk about.
Uh-oh, that's down
that's
the,
what I meant.
That's the bomb. What?
They changed his Ionic costume. Like, his costume's so cool. It did not need to be changed ever. Because that is, like, an awesome costume. Like, but now he looks, I don't not like his look at all. But at the same time, I love Peter David, and he doesn't let me down ever.
You think it's to take away Leonardi's claim on what part of the character he created?
Oh, is there's a big fuss about that?
No, I don't know if there's a fuss or not. I just know that, I just wonder.
It still looks like it still echoes the original.
No, it's why? Because he has the little claws on the hand. That's it.
Yeah, there's enough similarities. It's not the exact same thing.
That's
though.
Not true. You're wrong.
Then well, we as long as you think I'm wrong, you know.
Then we have Web Warriors number 1, which I don't know. Spider-Gwen, Spider-Ham.
Trying to get a little more water out of that Spider-Verse. Stone.
Yeah.
Then we have
Daredevil. Well, they split it up at the end of Spider-Verse, so they might as well use it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Then we have Daredevil number 1 by Charles Soule and Ron Garney.
You know I'm going to be reading this. Like, that's the one title I read forever.
But I want it to be Gambit.
That's so bizarre.
I think it'd be cool. Well, he was supposed to take over for Daredevil when Black Panther did. Like, he was one of the rumored.
That doesn't make any sense, though.
He had a relationship with Daredevil a bit. He was in it for a while, and when Armored Daredevil was going on.
He showed up for an issue or two.
Hey, he had a big part.
The Tree of Knowledge. You know, no one wants to remember the Tree of Knowledge, apparently. So I hear.
I was okay. I don't know. Then we have Guardians of the Galaxy number 1 by Bendis still, unfortunately. So this one's kind of weird because Star-Lord's a girl because it's Kitty Pryde now. We have The Thing, Rocket Raccoon, Drax, Venom, and Groot, which I do not like Groot's new look at all.
Yeah, I wonder. Needs more women, that's what I would say.
I wonder if Bendis will make this book better now that Kitty's in it.
Yeah, I think Kitty will be okay. And The Thing, I like The Thing being in a lot. But like Kevin says, yeah, we need another girl. And Groot, otherwise, yeah, I'm okay with the team. Well, I think Thing and it being on the team is really cool.
Yeah, me too.
I'm excited for that.
Rocket had his own series that isn't coming back, I don't think. Groot had his own series that isn't coming back, I don't think.
Oh, wow.
But now we have both Star-Lord and Drax getting the series.
But Drax is just going to be like, looks like it's just going to be like a fight club. they're feeding off that comic movie Fight Club, you know, that's very popular right now. And then we have Howard the Duck, number 1, which obviously I'm going to get now, since it's by the same team, which is Chip Zdarsky, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Joe Quinn. Yeah, so it's the same team. Nova number 1, which unfortunately for you is not the same team.
Nope.
I thought that was Rich Rider.
Oh, that would have been the best. But no, I don't think we'll be getting him back.
Oh, it's taking. No. It looks like the series is taking a bit of an Invincible twist.
Yeah. I didn't read the stuff that you enjoyed, so I'm not sure. I'm not into this yet, but maybe I was thinking of picking up the trades because they were praised.
You really should read the Dugan stuff. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so, well, they wrote most of it, didn't they?
He came on. He was the third. It was Loeb, and then somebody, and then Dugan.
Okay, I thought he took it over after Loeb. And then we have Star-Lord number 1. So we're getting a lot of Cosmic for sure. By Sam Humphrey and Dave Johnson.
Yep.
Star-Lord, I don't know. I feel like they're Star-Lord's not part of the Guardians of the Galaxy anymore. I think he's going to have all that stuff about how he's ruling his planet, I imagine.
Yeah, well, Humphreys wrote his legendary Star-Lord series that had just finished up, so it could be good. And Dave Johnson is doing the interiors? That will be great.
Mm-hmm. I thought he's doing the cover.
He did the cover also, but then there's no artist listed here.
Okay. Because
it's true. It says cover artist.
That makes more sense.
Because
he's more of a cover artist. He just did a Red Skull on my Marvel Villains Jam piece. That was really good.
Why do you think this is the only one where they didn't list the artist?
I see an artist. I don't think we're looking at the same list.
Well, in my magazine, there's none. Who's the artist?
Well, there is here. It's no one I remember. It says Javier Garron. I don't know.
Okay.
But also, I think of it as a Guardians title and also a Cosmic title is going to be Venom Space Knight.
I can't wait for this one. Just because, I don't know, I like the idea of Venom going around and getting in his own...
Cosmic adventures?
Yeah, in space. I think this title will work better than the previous one I talked about there.
Isn't that funny now, knowing what IDW is going to be doing, that Marvel has a title called Space Knight?
Oh, is it IDW coming out with Space Knight? Yeah.
They're having the ROM...
Revival.
I hope it does well because
Space Knight or whatever. The Space Knight, whatever.
I hope it does well because I have every ROM comic and maybe I'll be able to sell that for like a whole bunch.
Awesome. I love ROM.
I don't want to sell it, but
some of those first issues are really hard to get to back in the day. Like issue 2 was so hard to get.
Oh really?
I just bought a block.
I got them all in perfect condition for like $60.
Yeah, back in the day when issue 2s were always hard to get because the print run was always so much less than number 1. And
yeah, I'm surprised it's not worth more because everyone talks about it all the time.
Yeah,
not everyone. It's like a cult favorite.
Yeah, it's Mantlo and Buscema too. You know, it's
anyway. Then we have Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1.
Can't believe Rick Remender's not writing this book after lobbying for it for years.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I haven't seen him anywhere in here yet.
Right.
He isn't. He's taking a year off, at least.
That's what I'm saying.
He has 4 Image books. Like, that's enough to write. That's a lot of work.
I wonder if he's, like, a little pissed off then. That,
I don't think so.
It was probably just bad timing. He probably had the option to write it.
Yeah, absolutely. I bet you they did offer him, and then he just said, oh, I want some time
off.
He's
in on those retreats and stuff. He probably helped set the whole book up, you know? It's always a group effort on these things now.
Then we have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1. And it looks like Coulson is kissing Madame Hydra.
What?
So who knows what will be going on there, and who cares? Uncanny.
Oh.
Ooh, ooh. Uncanny Inhumans number 1 by Charles Soule and Steve McNiven.
Let's finally see what they were going to do with these Inhumans. It seems like they keep getting stuck in events.
Yeah.
I don't understand how Black Bolt's going to be okay with the Human Torch, Mac, and Medusa.
What about Crystal?
Well, he's not together with Medusa anymore. He left and yelled at his throne and ripped up his throne so that there wasn't a king and a queen throne.
Okay.
There's only a queen throne now, and he took off.
Well, wasn't he married to like 4 women anyways or some weird thing?
Oh, he's a jerk.
Well, there was the time in Hickman's run, he had the 4 queens or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that wasn't current, though, was it? I thought that was the past before.
Good job, John.
Oh.
I can't remember.
Then we have Karnak number 1 by Warren Ellis. Karnak's a character I would never buy a comic of, but I'm going to see how this one goes probably by ear because it could be very cool. But Warren Ellis is going to do a couple issues then go?
6 issues, probably.
Yeah.
That seems to be what he does.
Karnak is interesting because he's a doofy-looking character, but then when the time is right, he's the perfect character. Like, his line of saying that he sees a weakness and a way to get out of hell, if you guys came across that, I think it was in the Inhuman series when he's like, he's in hell because he got killed in the first issue of the last Inhuman series.
Oh, okay.
And in one of the last issues, they show him in hell, and he's like, trying to gather someone to help him try to get out of hell because he sees a weakness.
That was always his power.
I don't know.
If so, that sounds cool.
It was like a Wolverine in the series saying, now it's my turn with the Hellfire Club back in the day type moment. It was really good. And there was a lot of things that I thought were really sloppy about that last Inhuman series, mostly visually because of the Joe Mad type stuff.
Yep.
But that was a really cool moment. So I'm curious. I'm digging on Karnak right now.
Yeah, I'm definitely. That sounds interesting. I'll be excited to see what it's about. Then we have Angela, Asgard's assassin. I've been happy since she came to the Marvel Universe so far. I've liked her. I wish she was on the Guardians still, though.
No, she's not going to be Asgard's assassin now. She's going to be Queen of Hell with 1 L.
Oh, they changed the name?
So she's going to take over for Hela, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
So that's going to be interesting.
Yep.
And tied to the Asgard thing, but not... trying to find a place for her still, it sounds like. They try to find a place for her in Guardians. They try to find a place for her, you know.
I liked her in Guardians, though, because I liked her relationship with Gamora.
Yeah, except they were two of the same thing.
Yeah.
But they were like sisters, though. I don't know. It was really neat.
That was probably the best part of her coming to Marvel.
Mm-hmm. And then one I'm very excited for by James Robinson and Leonard Kirk is Squadron Supreme.
Yeah.
If it's as good as the Squadron Sinister Battle World book, then we're going to have quite a book.
I've always been a big fan of this team. I've always followed them and for some reason had a really big liking to them. So, and I'm a big James Robinson fan. And then we have coming to a close here, the X-Men titles. We have Extraordinary X-Men number 1 by Jeff Lemire. I don't know. It has the old man Logan. We have the young Jean Grey. I'm not too.
This looks exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, me neither yet.
I don't know. Could be the
another one of those Avenger type teams almost.
Avenger team.
Well, like how it's just whoever now. I don't like the idea of old man Logan being in this world. I love that series, old man Logan, but it's because of the setting, like. Like, I'm not really into the Secret War stuff either. It's kind of cool seeing them in the different worlds, but at the same time, I want to see the messed up Marvel world.
So you mean there's going to be still X-Men around?
Yeah, that's what I was like to at least see about these solicits.
Well, he's in our universe now.
There's 3 X-Books.
But it's just funny that, you know, people are like, oh, they might get rid of the X-Men, but they still keep on putting top talent on the X-Men. So, you know, they care.
Then we have Uncanny X-Men number one by Colin Bunn and Greg Land, who everyone loves, I hear. And it's Magneto leading a team of what looks like Psylocke, Mystique, Phantom X, and Sabretooth, who's good now. And it looks like X-Force. It's going to be X-Force, basically. Then we have all new, I don't know for sure, but that's, it's like, it seems like that team pretty much, like a team of like people who go on secret missions and stuff. Then we have all new X-Men, which is the young team again, but instead with, since Jean Grey is gone, it's X-23 right now with the team. And Angel has flame wings. What's with that? Oh, because I guess they kept all the, remember that storyline, the Black Vortex?
Right.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, so they, so him and Groot, that's why Groot looks different. They did keep that stuff, I guess. Unless he got mechanical.
What?
Maybe he's into the heavy metal. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. That's just the first I've ever seen it. And then we have an Old Man Logan book by Jeff Lemire, which I'll probably get that. Because it looks like a flashback.
Like the Green Arrow creative team.
Yeah.
And Old Man Logan, so. Might get some buzz.
And all new Wolverine, right? The female Wolverine?
Yes, exactly, by Tom Taylor, who's who I like. Yeah, so it's X-23. I don't think she should be traveling with the young X-Men just because I think they should make her more like an adult-type character now, just because if she's taking over for Wolverine. Like, I don't think she should be traveling around on goofy adventures with them. And then we have Deadpool number one also by Jerry Duggan.
Oh, yeah. Glad he's still doing it.
Yeah. So, just more the old Deadpool.
Also, and that's it. Also, there is the Black Knight.
Yeah, that looks interesting.
Black Knight, I didn't see
because
anything.
Because he's going nuts because of the ebony sword is tainting him.
Awesome, because I read a short story of that not too long ago, right, where it was locked in his apartment.
Exactly.
Going crazy. I love that one.
Yeah, so that's, that's...
What was that in?
Was it one of the point ones or something?
Okay, I think so, maybe, yeah, because I want to try and
find it. It's that kind of story. Like the all new Marvel Now point one, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
And
for
there's going to be a new point one for this post Secret Wars, one of those point one issues too.
Mm-hmm.
There's also going to be a new Unbeatable Squirrel Girl series.
Okay.
A new Hercules series.
Oh, nice.
And
by who?
Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
We must be excited. I assume we'd be excited.
Why Moon Girl?
I don't know Moon Girl, but I can't say that I'm a big fan of Moon Boy. So.
No, but it's something that doesn't need to be changed, though. Like,
yeah, well, you can see, like give us a pitch.
So many
someone...
characters have become girls now, which is fine, but it's just true. Stop but, once in a while.
Really? But when you were reading Devil Dinosaur, you were really excited for Moon Boy? That's like, I don't know, it was like me watching...
That's not the point. I just want someone not to turn into a girl for once.
They're not turning. It's a Moon Girl type of thing.
Like, Marvel's going a little crazy replacing their characters here, you think?
Like, I thought Devil Dinosaur and Moon Boy were separated anyways, and we just got to see Dinosaur.
I don't know. Moon Boy rolls off the tongue better, I find, too. And I don't really want to see a hairy girl running around.
True.
This is like, is this another ape girl or whatever?
Well, maybe we should get you to read it, Phil, and then you'll be able to answer some of your questions.
Maybe.
Because it looks like it'll deal with, you know, the easy catch-all Inhuman thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, should we do the big one and talk about Secret Wars number 5 to wrap this thing up?
Yes.
Let's see if we can. Our teleporters are working.
Did he break through the shield?
All right, we did it. We got Andrew in here. Andrew, welcome. Welcome to the Hornet's Nest.
I thought it was the bunker.
It's the bunker.
We're trying to breach that shield.
We are, exactly. We're operating spontaneously for this episode, throwing things together in between my crazy vacation schedule. So,
Andrew, you missed our talk about how much we love Fantastic Four.
I have been... somewhat, because of the bad reviews and everyone warning me off, I'm actually interested. At my comic book store, the woman was like, don't go. I got a free ticket, and my friend that bought me the ticket apologized to me after we watched the movie.
Don't go.
So I kind of want to see it.
Don't give the money.
You know how I know not to go? When Mr. Positive, Pat Loika, tells you not to go, that's usually a good sign.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of, it can be that.
Yes, it can be. Enough said.
Worse than the other two?
Oh, come on. Enough said.
I don't know.
Great movie.
All right.
No.
Andrew.
Yes.
What you been up to, pal?
Speaking of great Fantastic Four movies, I did go to a fun little show, the D23 convention in Anaheim. This is D23 is Disney's, I don't know if they're official or unofficial fan club, and every 2 years they have a big convention in Anaheim where they feature things that are coming up in the parks and in the movies, and with the acquisition of Star Wars and Marvel, those elements are liberally sprinkled throughout the show as well. In fact, I was surprised at the volume of Marvel that I saw, not just in the cosplay, but in displays on the floor, things that we're going to. I did only go to one panel. It was a Pixar panel. I always enjoy their stuff. And what made me have the Fantastic Four comment is, we can just pretend The Incredibles is a Fantastic Four movie, right? I mean, that's like kind of how it should be, correct?
It's the tone and everything, right?
You know, the family with the superpowers and all that. It was a lot of fun. They had a lot of weird merch. One place, it took them a long time to get the licensing, but you could have maquettes with your likeness put on either a Stormtrooper, a Mouseketeer, or Iron Man armor from the third movie.
Wow.
Whoa.
I don't know if you would want, some people would want, you know, it's like, I don't know. You know, it's weird seeing yourself. You'd be like, who wants that slub on there or whatever. Whatever.
Well, it's the new Star Wars armor. So it's that more streamlined design. So that was kind of, I haven't quite warmed up to the new look yet. And movie Iron Man isn't interested. If it was like some classic Bob Layton, maybe some space armor or something, I might have coughed up the, I think it was about a $150 or so to get one.
Yikes.
And it took about 3 to 4 weeks. But they were quite, you know, I mean, it's not just, you know, your picture plastered on. It's fully 3D printed, and they go over by hand and clean it up and everything. So, look, it was just one of those weird, where you're like, whoa. And they had a lot of the movie stuff was there. They had an Ant-Man costume and stuff for some of the upcoming films. Probably the biggest news is they're opening a Star Wars-themed portion of Disneyland. It's some date to be announced. Probably it'll take them at least 5 years to put it in, but that's pretty exciting. They've had some Star Wars rides, but to have a full land. Go ahead, Phil. Sorry.
Well, I'd say that'll be a big hit, and I'm sure they'll have a... Do they have a Marvel one yet?
No, they have a superhero meet and greet. You can meet Captain America, and you can meet Thor. And for a while, they had the Iron Man armors, these kind of different copies of the armors on display. They took those down while they're refurbing. I believe they're supposed to come back.
I'm sure they're working on more for Marvel, too.
Yeah, but I think they're still on the tail end of whatever the licensing agreement was that they had with, I don't know what it was, with Six Flags or with whatever.
It's Universal.
Yeah, Universal or whatever.
Yeah, the Spider-Man villain Scream and, like, weird characters at that old, like, Marvel Adventure Park from back in the day?
Right, and there was a restaurant with the different themed things and all that.
Yeah, when I was at Universal, there was like a Doom ride and all kinds
exactly,
of stuff.
Exactly. So I think they have lost the license, but it's in that kind of in-between time before Disney's taking advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
That Marvel Mania restaurant was my favorite restaurant out here, and then it closed around 2000 or so. I was very disappointed. Where else could you get overpriced chicken wings by a guy in a Wolverine outfit? But, yeah, Universal has the license. They still have all that stuff in Florida,
right?
But out here it's pretty much done. So it does, you can
That's
go
where
visit.
I was, Florida, yeah.
Yeah, they have that. The Spider-Man ride's pretty good. But what's so funny is I was there a few years ago, and the official Universal outfits are so bad compared to a lot of the cosplay.
Sure.
I mean, it's like you've been out, you know, shown up by civilians. You need to up yeah. your game a little bit.
I went on the horror nights where they had the horror specials, like the haunted houses and everything, with based on the movies, and their costumes were good and everything.
Cool. Yeah, that's a big moneymaker. Knott's and Universal. I know Knott's, I believe, makes like all of their money in like the 6 weeks, you know, mm-hmm. far and away. And then they even had Scare LA was a big convention that was a few weekends ago in Pasadena where vendors, because people now trick their houses out too with like full-on effects and everything.
Nice.
But yeah, there was just lots of fun. The Disney, Marvel, Star Wars, all coming together. There was, in fact, even I scored a comic book, mm-hmm. an Avengers comic book, which mm-hmm. I didn't know if maybe will be finding its way to some of the Marvel Noise contributors, perhaps, in the mm-hmm. future. Who can tell? These quality cross-promotional books.
What's it about? But
yeah, it was a fun... it's for the Playmation toys.
Yeah, gearing up.
Yes.
And has, it has an Ultron threat coming to, you know, New York, and Tony has developed all of these little gauntlets that will be for sale soon at a toy store near you, and they get all released to help the Avengers cover the worldwide threat of this Ultron invasion. They can only be one place at once, so... they shoot these little gauntlets all over the world in a climactic battle here.
So it's a big Twinkie ad.
Exactly.
Steve, you're forgetting, though, not just anyone can get the gauntlets. According to Jarvis, potential candidates have been thoroughly vetted using multiple criteria, both physical and behavioral. So you can't just go buy these things, Steve. You kind of... You have to meet the strict criteria.
Yeah, it's Big Brother keeping an eye on you guys.
Because, you know, this piece of $20 piece of plastic is really going to...
I think we'll be lucky if it's 20 bucks.
But yeah, so that was a fun... Who doesn't like free, crass comic books that mm-hmm. are shills for toys?
You know, there was just another... release that I saw that was related to Adobe products that was called Avengers Origins, and it was like a little short anthology with like 2-page origins of different Avengers, and they're really done in really indie style. I was really impressed by it. The artists are Alexandria Huntington, Emil Friss, Chad Lewis, and Hayden Sherman, and they do the origins of the all-new Cap, the Black Widow, Thor, and Iron Man. And again, I'm so surprised for, again, looking at what the art is on, like, that gearing up, how crazy yeah. indie these little 2-page origin stories are for the Avengers. But there's another one to look for. And it's a Mike Diodato cover on this Avengers Origins one.
Well, I'm sure it reflects the audience. These toys are probably for 8-year-olds where true. Adobe's... what, a couple $100 or something, so...
All right.
I'm sure we all have fully licensed, but speaking of shill comics designed to sell toys, don't we have another comic to talk about?
Exactly. Secret Wars number 5, the big one. The finale of our episode 251 here.
Oh, so we're going to get Molecule Man action figures and everything? Sweet.
Those Molecule Man issues of Fantastic Four where Reed grabbed the Molecule Man's staff and became the Molecule Man, and the buildings were like walking around town and people were falling out the windows and stuff. Those were awesome issues.
I always liked the Molecule Man. Good villain. I mean, the design wasn't maybe the most dynamic visually, but a good villain.
He got a little soft in that first Secret Wars, though. A little whiny with his chubby girlfriend there and everything.
Yeah.
Well, that's because I think they wanted to they had to work so hard to neutralize the more powerful bad guys.
Yeah.
Whether it be Galactus or whoever.
Yep. He needs his Achilles heel.
But honestly, I think you and Kevin hit the nail. This shouldn't have been called Secret Wars. This is a lot more like Emperor Doom reimagined than Secret War taste. Mm-hmm.
Really is. The issue opens up with Doctor Strange's funeral. We had Doom destroy Strange at the end of last issue.
I totally forgot about that, too.
Yeah, now he's lying to people about what happened.
But the Richards kids, both of them, they seem like they could be trouble to the whole who killed Strange. You know, Franklin seems like he's pretty mad at whoever killed Strange. Mm-hmm. And he's Valeria, powerful. Doom thinks he's being smart, tasking Valeria to find out who did this. But Valeria's a smart cookie, especially when Hickman's writing her.
Yeah, that's a bad bunch for sure to have against him.
At least Doom gave him a statue there.
Well, I think he wanted him so she could track down all the missing people. Not so much that for the murder, but for the ulterior motive of finding wherever the heck Doctor Strange sent all those crazy cats.
Yeah, she
won't. And technically, Doctor Strange was the heroes from 616's best chance at figuring this out right now.
I guess gatefold printing has gotten cheaper. I'm just a little cheesed. We have two of these fold-out gatefolds, and they're both ads. I'm like, they couldn't have, you know, maybe put some kind of cool battle scene or something on there. I mean, doesn't that cost extra? It's
pain in the neck.
I don't know, but isn't it like the good ads? Like, I don't know. It was like when I was reading a comic magazine, you get comic ads in there. I would be like, yes, comic ads. And then when you get a L'Oreal ad or something, then you would be really mad because you'd be like, this is totally unrelated.
Yeah, the comic ads don't do. I mean, you know, we have a really great artist and a good art team on this. Like, you could do some pretty impressive things, but they're spending the extra money to, you know, advertise the other comics.
Pretty much the whole rest of the issue is a discussion between Doom and the Molecule Man that pretty much reveals in their discussion them talking about how it all went down with him and Strange and the Molecule Man and how they formed Battleworld at those key moments fighting the Beyonders. And they kind of reveal that Owen, the Molecule Man, is a conduit to all of the collected Beyonder power that makes Doom a god. He's a giant battery. That's job is to live there under the core of Battleworld, basically feeding Doom his omnipotence. But like we were just saying before, he's got a shaky mental foundation, so that's got to come into play.
Yeah,
this really felt, I think this reflects the kind of weakness of the writing it as one trade, because it felt like just sort of fillery in a way. It's a comic book medium, and I didn't enjoy being told the stuff. Like, the whole Beyonder showdown is just told to us, because who'd want to see a big punch-up in a superhero comic?
Yeah, I kind of get that, but this was the one I was waiting for in a lot of ways. I'm so into what the story was. Like, this is, I mean, it's beautifully rendered, but I almost don't care. Because I'm, like, trying to get to the meat of, like, what's going on. Like, I'm just trying to wrap my head around it, to use the phrase I used before. But it's gorgeously rendered, from Strange's memorial statue to the last panel. It's fantastic.
And I don't know if I want to see a punch-up when you get to more cosmic things. Like, street level, I'm like, sure, I want to see the punch-up. But some of the cosmic stuff, I'm like, they're almost beyond that. Like, you should be showing it some other way, or they should be having some other fight on some other plane that we can't exactly perceive.
Hickman had a interview, the writer Jonathan Hickman, on CBR.com, Comic Book Resources, going over some of the beats to this issue, and he brought up something that I thought was funny, because I wondered whether it was him or the artist who put it in there, but the Department of Science headquarters is Magneto's old base from the first Secret Wars that looks like the big tuning fork, but it's like a souped up, you know, Assad Ribic drawn version of it, which is really cool. And the other thing that was neat, although it didn't relate necessarily to Secret Wars, is he said that S.H.I.E.L.D. Volume 2, his series with Dustin Weaver, is all finished and all drawn and everything, so that'll end up coming out after the last few issues of that, after this whole Secret Wars thing wraps up, which will then be his last thing for Marvel for a while. And he made one other little comment that was funny, too. He commented how there's no other Dooms or Reed in any of the Battle World, like how rare they are as singularities in the universe at this point.
Well, that's because Doom killed off all the other Reeds, didn't he?
No, he couldn't find any.
Yeah. Or at least that's what he said, or he didn't bring any. Because it was his... Remember, because that's what Strange was saying, is how do you choose who lives or dies? How do you decide what worlds to save or what not? Which ones to let go? That's why he couldn't handle it, because he had the morals where Doom could do it more cold-heartedly, but he could also do it to his advantage. Like, I'm not going to bring along any other Reeds or any other Dooms, but I'm going to bring me one Sue.
Now you know why he was freaked out when those rafts are discovered and there's another Reed. He's like, wait a second.
Yep.
That's not what I wanted.
We can't skip over the Thanos stuff at the end.
No, but we got to mention the Psycho Man is here too. In the Science Division.
Psycho Man.
Yeah.
Psycho Man is a great character. That's a great visual design.
Fear. Hate.
Where does Psycho Man show up?
He's on the team, Alex's team, in the Department of Science there, that are going to get to the bottom of this. Hickman also mentioned that he knew that there might be other books that are really tied closely in, but from off the top of his head, that Kieran Gillen's Siege book and Jason Aaron's Thor's book are both really tightly woven into.
Thor, really? Okay.
Yeah, the Thor's book.
I didn't know that.
Are both.
Do you know how? I know why Siege is, but I don't know.
Well, I know we got to see what the whole solution to who the murderer was. And
That's true. Yeah, I guess that has something to do with the murderer, maybe.
Let's go to the art of how these things are all connected in a way.
Right.
Because, in the Siege stuff, they've been hinting how they're looking for a Thanos, and they found the Affinity Gauntlet one, but then said that was the wrong one.
Right.
And there's one in the zombie area right now who wants to take down the wall.
That's our 616 Thanos when Doctor Strange scattered them.
And it's kind of funny, he's scarier than the one with the gauntlet.
Yeah.
But they even mentioned that.
Well, I think Thanos is going to bring down that wall just like was foretold in the prophecy that in X number of days that wall comes down. I forget which book that was.
Yeah, that was the Kang and the...
Yeah.
Maybe Siege. Because it had the lady from Sword.
Yeah, no, it was Siege. All that stuff's happening in Siege. Plus, in the Marvel Zombie Ultron book, they teamed up to take down the wall, too. So there's going to be a big force against the wall.
The stuff behind the wall, it seems like it was like really hard to survive. And then you see a few characters that have actually roughed it out there. But, that's going to really mess up the world if all these zombies and Ultrons and everything just starts swarming everywhere.
It's all going to come crashing down. They got 3 issues left, guys.
And do you think we're going to get Beyonders just maybe in the last issue, maybe?
No, I think they're done. I think
they're done forever?
Yeah. I think the Beyonders were a vehicle to tie it into the whole Secret Wars thing and to give Doom his omnipotence, and that was a smoke and mirrors type thing that you thought it was all going to be Beyonders stuff again. Because it's a rough concept, those Beyonders. I don't want to get into them again too much.
You know, at this point, I start thinking, you try not to think about the end or how they're going to, do titles after this. But I start wondering, someone's going to have to discover something about how to put the universe back together or whatever. Because there's so many other outs that are just going to be... You won't be happy if that's how the story ends, where Franklin puts everything...
I know, yeah.
So it seems like there's not many ways that you can put things back together again without it being some sort of weird cop-out.
We'll see.
It's just going to be a big reset.
We're getting rebooted?
I don't know. I don't know, Andrew.
But they have to. Everyone's dead.
They're not going to have all these characters stay. You guys can hold on to those Death of Wolverine issues as his last appearance, but I'm pretty sure we're going to see him coming back again. I did think there was a possible way to reveal something that's been that troubled us previously. And I thought maybe what might be happening is, you know how we had problems with the space books and this?
Right.
He talks about deep diving in the negative zone inside the planet. I wonder if that's where all the space stuff is, maybe. It's some weird physics bending idea, because that's something that Valerie says to the troop. You know, like dropping all the problems. And so I thought maybe all that space stuff is actually in the middle of the planet.
Oh, yeah. Well, they passed through it to get to the other side, which was, you know, remember they did that whole thing and they came out on the other side and that's where they found the life raft. They were exploring into the planet.
Because, you know, we were talking about Guardians of Nowhere and all that, and how could that be? So maybe they're just inside the middle of Battle World.
You know, well, they've said that Guardian's head is floating around out there, and it's the only thing, though. So, I don't know.
Well, I thought maybe it was floating around in, you know, you could have a whole pocket dimension.
True. I hear one calling
now. Someone's a bad podcaster.
The Red Skull is paging us.
Well, that's Secret Wars number 5. I can't wait to see what happens next.
Well, yeah, with that Thanos cover.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for joining me again, guys, doing this. Appreciate it. Under much scrutiny and tight timetables here.
We'll wait for our checks in the mail.
Upcoming on the show, we will finally get to that Silver Sable series. We're going to try to cover the Secret Warriors series of Hickman's. And in October, Jerry McDade's going to join me to go over the old Tomb of Dracula series, Wolfman and Colin and Palmer.
Ooh, that should be fun.
Yeah. Never covered all that stuff yet.
All right. Thanks, guys. And I'll catch up with you on the other side of the next vacation. We'll see what we can put together for you. Until the Beyonder gets another perm, make mine Marvel.
Later.